should be in the middle. Pasuk Vav, let's go back. Page 4, let's read the Pasuk again and continue where we left off. Pasuk Vav begins, V'chol pesilecha yu kasu. All of the idols will be beaten into smithereens. V'chol esna neha yisarifu. All of the gifts that were given to the idols. Okay, here we learned over here yesterday, this refers to the idols will be burnt. Bo'esh v'chol atzabecha asim shemama. All of, another word for idols, these are basically many different words which it appears to be coined, at least according to the Mitzudos, as we learned yesterday. It's just basic poetic repetition. Poetic repetition describing all different items, idols or offerings to the idols. The pisilecha are the idols. And this expression that we just said before, again, atzabecha is another word for an idol. The esnaneha are the, what was that? Atzabim kesev azav maaseya, they're idols. It's another word for an idol because it brings sadness. Yeah. A person has confidence in these things. People are desperate. They have problems, and they offer sacrifices. They burn their children in honor of these idols, and they do not produce results. Everything in life all comes down to results. Marketing, you have to produce results. And when there are no results, then there is sadness. So asim shemamon, in the middle between the atzabeha and the word pisilecha, two words which mean idols, we have the word esnaneha in the middle, which are the offerings that are given to the idols. So it's interesting over here how we combine these three words together according to the mitzudos that we learned yesterday. Pasuk continues, asim shemama, I will make them desolate, ki me esnan zena ki botza. We had Esnan Zayna Yashuvu. This we discussed yesterday at great length. This idea in the Mitzudos is that, according to him, Hashem is saying that all of the wealth, do not be impressed with the wealth of Yerushalayim and the wealth of Shomrein. If you look into the bank accounts, all the money came illegally. All the money came, was acquired, was accumulated as offerings to the gods, to Avodah Zarah. And therefore, because all of the money, their wealth, came to them in an improper way, the enemy will conquer and destroy Yerushalayim and Shomrein, will steal all of their assets, and the assets will be delivered, will be given over to other gods. When Sancheirev will attack, and he will take all the gold and silver of the Aseres HaShvatim, what will he use it for? He'll use it for his own idols. And when Nebuchadnezzar will attack and conquer Yerushalayim and will take all of their wealth or their money, what will they use their money for? He'll use it for his own idols. Why? Because the money of Yerushalayim, it's going to return to where it came from. It was given, it was money that was Avodah Zarah, set aside for Avodah Zarah. So that's where it belongs. It belongs together with all of the Avodah Zarah. Interesting, there's a very big debate. What happened to all the gold and silver? All right, Lawrence Schiffman. Anyone know who the Dr. Lawrence Schiffman is? Professor, he's the professor now. He's in NYU, I believe. He's always on the move. He was there for a tkufa in NYU. What? A lot of things, right? He has a lot. He's all over the place. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I met him. I sat with him at a table for a very long time. About 10 years ago, I spent some time with him. He's a professor. He's like an Eluyusha person. He's aluf. So he writes. His articles appear. Ami magazine, the Sakma publication. They have him on his payroll. Okay, and he writes articles for them every so often about various historical things. And one of the things that he writes about, what happened, at least one article that I recall. What happened to all the gold and silver of Yerushalayim when the Romans destroyed the Bayis Sheni and they took with them, you see the Arch of Titus, you see them carrying the menorah. So they built, okay, right. So, but what did they do with the gold? Where did it end up? So he argues very... They use it to fund, and what happened after they used it? All the kalim, what happened, like, let's say the menorah, all of, so he argues, I mean, what he's saying is a little bit controversial, but he argues that a good chunk of the gold and silver that was in Yerushalayim basically is today, can be found in people's jewelry. I don't know to what degree that's so, but basically it was melted down and it just entered into circulation. And today, I mean, who knows, a person may have a piece of jewelry, you may have there that piece of jewelry, a teeny portion of gold or silver that once upon a time was in the Beis HaMikdash, in Yerushalayim. The gold and silver, he tries to show with his expertise and his research, is that the gold and silver of Yerushalayim was ultimately just melted down and used by the common man. It was sold, it was just put into circulation by the government, like you said, to build the Colosseum. They paid with gold and silver, and the gold and silver wasn't just coins, it was used for melted down into jewelry and ornaments, and who knows where it is today. Who knows? So it's interesting, so over here we're saying, where did the money come from? Where, when the money was originally given to the Beis HaMikdash, it's an enormous amount of wealth. We discussed it yesterday. I learned, what was the kavana? How was the money earned? Just to go back to the earliest source from this principle, and that comes from Bezalel. Chazal tell us that when a person, Bezalel was not just a craftsman. We lose sight of this. He was also a fundraiser. Bezalel, when he collected gold, silver, and the 13 materials that were needed to build the Mishkan, he looked the benefactor in the eye. And he had a talent. He's only 13 years old. It's hard to believe this. But as it says in Chazal, he had this ability to look into your eyes and to detect the degree of sincerity you had when you gave a gift for the Mishkan. There are five people online, and each one is bringing to the building of the Mishkan a bar of gold. Five people. They come, they say, Bezalel, Moshe Rabbeinu made a campaign, he made an appeal, everyone should bring gold for the Mishkan, to build the Mishkan. Here is a bar of gold. Next guy, here is my bar of gold. Someone brings, here's some silver. Chazal say, but Saul was able to look at the person and can detect the degree of sincerity. There was one person was so sincere, it was with such a desire to serve Hashem, he put that aside in a special place. Another person, he was pressured into giving the money. Really, he wasn't so excited about this. But his friend said to him, I'm giving this. How much are you giving? So in order that he should not feel any less than his chaverim, so he also gave the same bar of silver. Did he really believe in the cause? Not necessarily. We'll see you today. Today you go to Shul, make an appeal. They call out, they publicly embarrass everyone by making a public appeal, and the opening of number is $1,000, and then there are people there in the audience in the Beis HaKnesses says, I don't believe in this cause. This is not what I give money to, but I'm part of the Shul. And my chaverim, they believe in it. They made an appeal for it. I don't have a choice. I can't be embarrassed. I'm part of the club. I'm part of the team. That's the whole reason why they publicly embarrass everyone, in order to pressure you to give money for a cause that you really don't believe in. That they don't believe in, whatever. You don't understand what I mean. That's the way it goes. So it was no different in the time of the Mishkan. Absolutely no different. There was pressure. Moshe made an appeal. People gave. Everyone gave, of course, B'leif Shalim, but there were different madrigals, different levels. But Salo was such a chacham, he was able to detect, he was a psychologist. Okay, he was able to detect the desire, the rotzai to give a gift, and the more sincere a person was, he would use that money for a holier matter. So he was very sincere. His gold went what? For the kruvim. The gold went for the oroin. Someone that wasn't so sincere, so his gold went for some plates of gold that were all the way on the outside of the krushim, on the extremest part of the krushim. Someone who did not have that same passion to serve Hashem. It's a chokhmah. And when it comes to the Mishkan, the holiest thing that ever existed, that kavana made a very big difference. Here we're going to the other extreme. The money that's been donated to Yerushalayim, we have over here a beautiful city, Yerushalayim, and money's pouring in. Yeah, where's the money going? The money is going to worship idols. There is a whole collection of idols, and for every idol there's a tax. We have no clue what the whole of the system was all about, but there was enormous corruption, and people were giving money for ulterior motives, not l'shem shemayim. That money, Hashem says, I am not interested in. Let the enemy enter, let them take that money, and let them use it for their idols. If the money was given for an idol, good, so go use it for an idol. Not in Yerushalayim, not in my house. Not in my house. Go to India, and there you want to go worship idols? So go take the money, go worship the idols in India. Don't go worship the idols over here in my property, my territory, my holy place, the Beis HaMikdash. That's what it says here in this pasuk. Ki me esnan zayna ki batza. The money that came into Yerushalayim was all given as an offering. In Esnan Zayin, according to what we learned yesterday in the Mitzvot David, it means an offering to idols. It was given with a kavana to serve an idol. So you know what? V'yad Esnan Zayin, Yeshuvu. Let it go. Let the enemy enter, take the money, and let them go use the money to go offer idols in another location, not in my holy place. Now let's take a look at Rashi. We only did yesterday the Mitzvot. Let's see Rashi. Rashi goes like Zayin. Sorry?
It's keeping the idea alive to go someplace else.
It's keeping, well, Enochanami. As long as Mashiach has not come, and the Umay Sa'ilam, and Hashem, V'hoi Hashem L'melech Al Kol Ha'aretz, until that day comes, there's going to be Avodah Zarah, and the people who do Avodah Zarah need money, they need a fund, so let Enochanami, let them take this money. When Mashiach will come, then it will be abolished. But as long as Avodah Zarah is in existence, he's saying something very good. Is that, yeah, you want to give money for Avodah Zarah? It's a lesson. It's a lesson. Klal Yisrael, this is not what you do. This is not you. Klal, in Yerushalayim, we don't tolerate nonsense. Nonsense? Another part of the world we tolerate nonsense. It's a holy city. It's not a place. We live in a world where there's a lot of nonsense. That's how it is. But not in this Magam. I never really appreciated this, but I was married to Shaul, I think last year it was. I think it was last year, last summer, and I really, I never had such a sense of appreciation of, I mean, they always say, it's not so simple to live in Eretz Yisrael. You got to behave. It's called the Paltoin Shel Melech, the palace of the king. And certainly to live in the old Yerushalayim, to live in the old city. I remember I was talking once to a Rosh Hashiva, and he was saying basically, like, I wouldn't want to live in the old city. Even if you give me a house, you know, worth $1 billion there, you know, the real estate there is probably the most expensive in the world. I'm not interested. I don't feel I could behave. I could behave properly. You have to. You know, no internet, no smartphones. You're living in the Paltoin Shel Melech. This should not be on your mind. You should be a different type of person. You want to be like me? You want to be sick in a lot of old things? So then, you know, go to Beis Shemesh. Go far away. Get on a bus. Go live in Eretz Yisrael. But in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, there are higher standards. And I really sense, when I sense this? When I was there, they had in Yerushalayim the gay parade. Okay, where was I staying? What? I was there. So I came out of the hotel. It was last summer. I came out of the hotel, and there was a policeman, a guard, and he told me I wanted to go on the bus to go to Yerushalayim. I wanted to go somewhere. I don't know where I wanted to go. And he told me, no, you can't go here. The street is closed. And they blocked, they barricaded everything. And you have to walk all the way around. Azoy. Why? Because in a few hours, there was going to be the gay parade. Marching right through Yerushalayim. And I started going, walking my way to walk around because it was all barricaded, the whole path. Because you can imagine, a lot of kanoim were coming out probably to fight with these people, and then, as I was walking, all of a sudden I hear helicopters. You know, the mamash, a war is about to break out in Yerushalayim. Mamash, a war, helicopters, and then what really scared me was these policemen on motorcycles. They were dressed in black, no uniforms. Like in America, you see a cop, he's wearing no uniforms. Two guys, a motorcycle. these high-tech motor, not your ordinary motorcycle, on these high-tech motorcycles, two people sitting back to the, on it together. The other guy's like holding on almost. They're sitting on. Yeah, maybe, I guess so. Dressed in black from top to bottom, all over the place. All these guys all over the place. And they look pretty scary. Okay, they look have backpack. They look like they probably have enough ammunition to blow up the world on them. And I asked someone, oh, these are like, you know, special forces. And they hear whatever they're called, SWAT teams, whatever they are. All right, fine. And then, I'm telling you, you're not going to believe me. I'm an eyewitness. You know, it was a regular day, and all of a sudden, it got very, very cloudy. It never gets cloudy in Yerushalayim in the summertime. It gets cloudy? Never. I'm telling you, I'm not lying to you. It got very dark. And it got very windy also. It was very bizarre. And you really felt, I really, for the first time in my life, it wasn't just theoretical. I really got this sense. Like, you know, I'm like, I consider myself to be very, like a liberal almost. Very easygoing. Like, leave me alone. I'm not interested. Do whatever you want. Don't bother me. I have my own problems. Do whatever you want. I'm not a fighter. I'm not a fighter. Do you want to do this? Just don't bother me. But I got this sense. You don't do this here. You don't. It's like I really felt like Hashem was making a statement. I know it's hard to believe. How could this be in modern times?
Not in my.
You don't do this here. You want to go do this? Gesund hate. Do whatever you want to do. It's a free world. But here, mamish, in the heart of the Ir HaKodesh, you really got that. I really felt it. I really felt it. It was like eerie. It was like Hashem was showing his displeasure of, you don't do this here. I remember I passed the embassy. That wasn't embassy. They were in Yerushalayim. To me, it looked like the embassy. I used to, on the way to shul in the morning, there is a, you probably know where this is. There's a street there. I don't know. There's this big facility, which it's heavily guarded. You see, they are sold. There are American soldiers, but Americans standing there look like security.
You're talking about the consulate.
Is that where it is?
Not the new embassy.
And you know, it's heavily guarded, and it's like it's fenced in, it's a big wall, and they had this big, and that was right along the parade route. And when I went to shul the day that day, and then during that week, they had this massive banner along the wall of this gated consulate, where with the American flag, and it said on it, "America stands with you, and we support you." The gays, like. That's right. Like, I guess they told that this is this street, the mazel is, it's exactly where the parade is the parade is going, and they put up on the consulate this big banner, the United States of America, we support you, you're within your rights to do this. I don't know, what some type of nusach. You don't do that. I felt like Hashem was saying, this is my house here, chutzpah. You don't do this in my house.
One of the central themes of gay is in your face.
That's
right.
It's not like they can live nicely. It's just
deliberate. I remember it was a very big revelation to me when I was many many years ago when I was reading about feminism, and they wrote that it used to be a feminist meant women are better than men. They're better. They're smarter. They're more sophisticated. They have much more to offer. And then they wrote in this article that today they don't do that anymore because there's backlash. Because that's racism. The same way they don't like when we say about them, we say that women are, that someone will say that women are inferior, they have to take a back seat. To say that a man is inferior is the Zelbazach. So now it's equality. Okay, the new form of feminism is equals. So to say that gays, to say they're in your face, That's not fair. That's racism to say that they're better.
You're
only 3%, by the way, of the population.
But
yeah.
The president ordered that no embassies should
why any of these rainbow banners?
The rainbow banners.
Yeah, the banners that you described.
It wasn't a rainbow banner, but it was a banner.
Whatever it was. No, nothing that identifies with the so-called pride.
But that's what I saw. I saw my own eyes.
It was Obama's time?
Now,
last year, Trump.
It was last year.
Last
this year.
Yeah. Oh, it changed. No, wow.
Nothing with the
flag. Wow. So it's amazing.
That's a big thing.
Big thing. That's a very big thing.
Yeah. He's not a moral person, but he does a lot of good things. He's not a moral person.
Oxymoron. They once said, I think. I don't know who this was, Plato, Aristotle, one of the two. He was once caught. Doing something very disgusting, a taiva, who knows what it was. And he was caught. Someone caught him. So his students, one of his talmidim said, "Hayitochein, the great Plato, the great Aristotle, goes and he succumbs to such lowliness. He lived with an animal. Who knows what he was doing?" So he said, "Look, what he says, unbelievable what he said, like a real philosopher." And this really, really defines the difference between them and us. He said, when I was doing that Maisa, I wasn't Plato. I wasn't Aristotle. I was someone else. I left my matziv, my godless of Aristotle. Now I put that over. I left it and I did what I wanted to do. I was a different person at that moment in time. Okay, that's exactly the difference between, and you know, he said it seriously. That is exactly the difference between Yadus and everything else. In Yadus, there's no escape. You are who you are 24/7, from the moment you're born to the moment you die and beyond. There's no such thing that, well, I'm doing an Avera. Oh, I'm not part of Klal Yisrael. I could escape. That idea is far and impossible. It's total nonsense.
You sign a waiver.
What?
You sign a temporary waiver.
Total nonsense, such a thing. But that, unfortunately. Okay, so this is a very powerful yisoid. This yisoid, really, these words over here, and this pasuk, cannot forget, ki me esnan zayna ki botza, v'yad esnan zayna yashuvu. And he also mentioned Koirach. Koirach, where did he get his money? He found one of the three treasures of Yosef. Yosef had this talent as well. Yosef was able to assess when people came to purchase grain and they paid with money, where did the money come from? Anyone who came and gave him money that was earned through Avodah Zarah, he put it in a special account. Koirach found that account. So the money that he found was dirty money. And his wealth was all built upon dirty money, and that had an effect on him. And that's why the earth swallowed him up and all of his wealth. Ki me'esnan zayna ki botza. You got your money. That money was the money that came from dirty money. So that's where it goes. It goes back where it came from. Don't expect to be successful by building an institution or anything for that matter with money that was earned illegally, or money that is just type of money that it may not be illegal. There's a lot more of Yadus than just what's illegal. It's just not something we are proud of. You can't expect to be matzliach when you're eating food, the money that you're paying to buy, put bread in your stomach or for your children, is money you can get away with it. No one's going to put you in jail. It's all legal. And Choshe Mishpat, no Dayan can say that what you have done is awesome. But is it correct? V'asisa ha-yosher v'hatoiv? That, you know, you have to judge. To each his own. Like I always like to tell you that joke. I love this joke. Is that the guy comes to Bezdin and the Dayan says to him, you lose. you lose $1 million. There's nothing I can do for you. I went to the Shulchan Aruch from beginning to end 1,000 times. There's nothing I can do for you. Case closed, you lose. And the plaintiff said, the Baal Din said, but Rebbe, Yashrus, you're right, I lose. But is this Yashrus? So the Dayan starts banging on the table and says, Shaita, you want Yashrus? Yashrus is dead. It's Rosh Tevois, Yiskadal v'Yiskadash Shnei Rabbah. Yosher, you want Yosher? Yud is Yiskadal v'Yiskadash Shin and Resh Rabbah. Yosher is dead. There's nothing that you can do. Okay, now let's see Rashi. Rashi pasuk zayin ki mi estan zayne ki batsa kol ahoin azel. Same as you said, all the wealth was accumulated through avodas, through estan zayne, which we were always learning here. At least simply avodas zara, just a code word for avodas zara. Ver estan zayne yoshuvu uletimyoin. It's going to be timyoin means to be buried or to be put away, or it means to be destroyed. There are many translations. I don't have a good translation for Timyon. Timyon means it's going to be cease to exist. Cease to exist, yeah?
Used up.
Okay, it's going to be
Like to finish.
To finish off. It's going to be finished off. It will disappear, dissipate. Cease to exist. Kisha'or esnane zayna yashuva kol kivutzai seha. All of the wealth that was accumulated illegally will be returned to a place of nothingness. The Yonasantegim Ulaves Ulavizas Polche Tavosa Yis Masrun. Same idea to the people who worship idols. Really, just I don't know if he's coming to disagree. Let's not get too didactic too much here for now. Same idea that into a place of where they worship idols. Tavasa, who's the Targum's translation for Avodah Zarah? A mistake. Avodah Zarah is an error. It's a mistake. It's a mistake to think that there's another force in this world that can bring you benefit and it's worthy of your service. Yis Masrun, the money, the wealth of Klal Yisrael will be given to people who worship idols. Why? Because the money was earned amongst the Jews with an intent to worship idols. So that's where the money goes. Easy come, easy go. Let's take a look at the Radak. The Radak Pasuk Zayin. Okay, it's a long Radak. And that's a long Radak. Let's try to go quickly. Back on page 451. The Chol Pisilecha Yukasu Yishav will be broken. B'bnei HaKes V'azav Sh'ala Psilim. All of the idols will be destroyed. Why will it be? This is just giving us some more insight. Not because Nebuchadnezzar and Sancheriv really have a desire to smash the idols. The only one that really cared about smashing the idols was Avraham Avinu. He smashed the idols for its own sake. Avraham Avinu would smash the idols. What?
The other guys did it.
Right, he said, right, I'm sorry, Rav Kalman corrected me that Avraham Avinu didn't do it. The other gods did it. Right? All the funny midrashim that he put, his father came to, and Terach says, he walks in, and the whole store is just smithereens. So he says to Avram, what happened? I left you here for a few minutes. I come back, the whole place. So Avram, he points at one idol. There was one idol still standing, and in that idol there was a big axe. So Avram Avinu said, I didn't do it. That idol did it. That did it. And Terach says, ridiculous! And idols don't have any power to do anything. Listen to your own words. That's right, they don't. So this whole thing is not. What was the other good joke? The other good joke was Avraham Avinu. I really like this joke. Is Avraham Avinu every morning he came into the shop and he said to himself, "What would I like today for lunch? Yesterday I had salmon, so today maybe a steak would be good. Okay, it'll be a steak." With maybe some rice and some beans and maybe, you know, a nice bottle of wine. That's what I would like today for lunch. Okay, let's keep that in mind. 10 minutes later, a woman walks in and says, Abraham, I need an offer. I got a problem. I need to offer a sacrifice to the God. What should I bring? I think a good sacrifice would be a piece of steak, some rice, some beans, and a nice bottle of wine. That would be the proper thing in your situation for your problem. That's what I think, I'll pick Kabbalah, what you need to do in order to be spared. Okay, very good. I'll be back in 10 minutes. She goes into the restaurant, she buys some steak, some rice, everything, and he tells her to be ready. And she puts it, says, here it is. I put it down nicely, arrange it nicely in front of the idol. And we'll pray. I'll pray with you. She puts it down and he gives her his blessing. Okay, very good. Everything is good now. She walks out of the store. I mean, he rolls up his sleeves. Ah, it's time for lunch. And that was his lunch. It was the Medrash. Okay, it was such a bunch of nonsense. That's exactly how he conducted himself in his father's store. He thought it was a bunch of nonsense. It was nonsense. Okay, so going back over here, we back over now. Here's the interesting thing with the Radak. The Radak over here, very interesting. He says, Nebuchadnezzar, Sancheiriv, they come into town, they see these idols. They couldn't kill less. It's not worth the effort for him to pick up his hand and to smash the idol. Who cares about these idols? It's a waste of time. So why then is he smashing the idol? Because the idol is plated with gold and silver. I want the gold and silver. So the way you get the gold, you have to go smash it to take off the gold and silver. That's the only reason why he smashed the idol. Think about that. Contrast that with Avram Avinu. When he smashed the idols, it wasn't about the gold and silver. He couldn't care less about the gold and silver. There was no gold and silver. It was, how dare you, the sensitivity, how dare you believe there's something else in this world other than the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a very big difference in when you see it's not about the money, it's about the principle. Okay, so here it's a very simple Radak, but yet the Radak is saying he's opening up a whole world in a few words that you would never even imagine. The Radak on page 451, V'chol pesileha yukatu, they would smash all of the idols, yishavru, why? Well, because they could care less about they want to show how dare you worship an idol. Why worship your idol? Worship my idol. That's not the issue. Bibnei ha-kesef, ve-ha-zav, sha'al ha-pasilim. It's all about money. Ha-kesef, ya-anes, ha-kol. Money, money, money. Sha'al ha-pasilim. Okay? Next radak. S, the S-na-neha. What's the S-na-neha? The gift. So here he's telling us, Habigadim Hayafim Shayu Bibati Hapsilim Shayu Naistim Sham Ibn Kavar Hapsilim. He writes over here something very interesting. I don't think I recall seeing this idea. He's being very specific that he translates the word esnan, clothing. We always assume in the Torah, an esnan zoina is cash, money, or an animal. It's either an animal itself, if I'm not mistaken, it's money. A man lives with a harlot, a zoina, and she says there's a service fee. And the service fee gives her either an animal or it gives her cash. And then this zoina takes that animal to the Beis HaMikdash and they tell her, I'm sorry, where did you get this animal from? And she tells them, I got it from my services. You're not allowed to. It's an Isser de'oraisa. This animal is not a kosher carbon. So in this context, what does it mean in this context? So the Radak says, that's not what it means over here. It means that they would dress up the idol in beautiful clothing. Like dolls today, okay, American Girl doll. You know how much money they make on the accessories, on the clothing? They make on the clothing a lot more than they make on the dolls. Okay, it's a whole business. The esnana habigodim, the beautiful clothing. You go to the online, you ever see, you can match. You buy a set for the child and the doll. They should be wearing the same thing. The child's clothing should match the doll's clothing, not the other way around. Whose clothing is matching who? It's a big business.
You have to change it every season also.
Every day, every season. Every day. It's a fashion show.
You have to have the dolls here, though.
That's right.
It's more than it costs.
They, They have an American Girl. American Girl. They have a what's it called? A salon. What's it called? A salon. They mamish. You sit down. They sit down. They bring. They put the dolls on the chair, and they have hair stylists. They have hair stylists. They have an infirmary. Infirmary. I remember my mother was a very good grandmother, the best. She bought for my niece's American Girl doll. So it's like a big thing to buy in America, like the Spitz, American Girl. So the women hacked it, and my father went in with my mother, and my father saw the salon. My father could not get over it, could not believe at kidei kach. That they have there, you come, you put the American Girl doll on a chin. There's a hairstylist. Could not believe how far this industry has gone. At least they're living creatures, pets. At least they're alive. At least they're living creatures. A doll? All right. What do I know? But if it makes money, it makes money. But over here, dealing with the czar, they did even more bizarre things. At least a doll. No one believes in a doll. We don't find today the average Pesach telling you that a doll is a Avodah Zarah. No one says that. Not in our circles. Nothing. You have to go. You used to hear stories years ago. Oh, you have to go and knock off the doll's nose. Did you ever hear that before?
Yes.
You don't see that. I don't see that being done today. You see that being done today?
If you have a statue, they use
a statue. A statue. But a doll? Everyone read the book, All for the Boss. Everyone read Ruchama Shane. She got a doll. And the first, what?
Why should it be a difference, a statue or a doll?
A statue is I don't know. A doll is a toy. A doll is a toy. A statue is more of a dover sheyesh by mamish.
Symbol.
It's a pesel. Mamish a pesel. A doll is a toy. It's viewed, it's perception maybe. I don't really know that. So everyone remember the story of Ruchama Shane. She wrote the awful the boss, and she writes there. It's very, very powerful how she writes. It was a little girl, and she got a doll. And the first order of business was her father took the doll and cut off the nose. And it was for her, as a child, a traumatic experience. That her father took the doll and took off the nose. Took off the nose like a doll is a person in a child's mind. It's not a double posh, but today, I've been around Lakewood. I don't see anyone in Lakewood that has a doll that's missing a nose. Sorry to tell you, I'm certainly not in Flappish. I have not seen this. This is a chumrah. Gezeira she'ein hatzibur yecholim lamayba.
That's because the ACLU filed a suit on behalf of the
homo. They All right, but over here he writes about they would dress up their idols in clothing. Esnaneha habgodim hayafim shahayu bebatei hapesilim shahayu noistim sham bebnei kvod hapesilim vehem k'moy esnan zayna. So this is the equivalent. It's the equivalent to an esnan zayna. Shehem hayu zayna macharei hapesilim v'machadim ha'yisam. They would be led astray after the pesilim, and they would give it honor. B'kesev v'zahav uvi begodim. No, in beautiful clothing. So therefore, when it says over the first part of the pasuk over here is they're going to smash the psilim. That's to extract the gold and silver. Then it says they're going to burn the esnan, according to the radak. They're going to burn the clothing. Okay, they're going to burn the clothing. Yisrifu vo'esh ki ki kasher lochtu ho'ir she'shulchua vo'esh l'roiv Kitzbom al yoshvecha she'amdu b'motzah shalishanim v'loy ratzu lahashlim. They're going to burn in fire. Who's going to burn in fire? They're under siege for 3 years. Yerushalayim, the bayis rishon, that is today. This Sunday is unfortunately the end of the siege. Okay, the bayis rishon was under siege not for 3 years, only 2.5 years. From Asara B'teves, 1 year, another year, and another half a year from Asara B'teves to Shiva Asara B'tamas. No one went in, no one went out. There was starvation, there was famine, and then finally on Shiva Asara B'tamas, the enemy, on Nebuchadnezzar, breached the walls. And when the walls were breached, the enemy entered. So during this time, it says over here that there was a lot of fires. I'm not sure what he means over here, whatever it means. So here he's coming to explain to us the repetition. It's not just poetic repetition. He says here the Atzabecha means the churches. Three different elements. The idols will be smashed to extract the gold and silver. The clothing will be burnt. And the churches, the Atzabecha means the churches will become desolate. It was choshuv. They're going to become now shemama. He translated the bote, the places of avodah zarah. Okay, the next words. Ki mi estan zayna ki batza. Both. This machloikis in Bavli Yushalmi is as far as Tess, referring to what it says. So there's a contradiction. In the year, I forgot which one it says what. It's the same event is recorded in Yirmiyah and in Sefer Melachim. I believe in Sefer Melachim it says the 17th. I'm not sure. One place it says 17, one place it says 9. So there's a contradiction. So the Chazal, this machloikis, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. I don't remember which one says what. One of them says is that in Achnami, it was on the 9th. Correct. The real date is the 9th. So why then do we not commemorate the 9th? Why do we commemorate the breaching of the wall on the 17th? So there are two answers. One is the Ikur Avelos that we commemorate in today's times is the Bayis Sheni. That's a very important lesson. Because if we would commemorate the Churban Bayis Rishon, then we really should fast on the 9th day of Tammuz, not on the 17th day of Tammuz. But being that we commemorate the 17th day of Tammuz is clearly an indication by Chazal that the primary Avelus today is the Churban Bayis Sheni. The other answer given is, the truth is, the walls of the Bayis Rishon were breached on the 17th. And the reason why it says in the Pasuk the 9th was because, it's shocking, but it's because they lost track of time. And they mistakenly thought it was the 9th day of Tammuz, when it was actually the 17th day of Tammuz. So it says in the Gemara. I think it says that either in the Bavli or the Yerushalmi, it's Machlokes. They lost track of time. And you have to appreciate what a bezoin that is. Because what does it say in the Pasuk in Vayis Hanan? Ki hi chachmaschem ubinaschem le'enei ho'amim. Asha yoimrun, mi kagoy hazeh, am chochom v'novoin. What does that refer to? What are the nations of the world going to say about Klal Yisrael that there's no one in the world that's like them? The soid ho'ibur. And what does that basically mean? It means the calculation of time. There is no one in the entire world that is skilled in calculating time. Okay, it's not for nothing that Einstein discovered our relativity, the theory of relativity. The theory of relativity has a lot to do with time. It has a lot, everything to do with time. And Einstein is a Jew, as you all know. And the whole world is in awe of him. It's mamish, a fulfillment of what it says in the Pasuk, ki hi chachmaschem ubinaschem le'enei ho'amim, asher yomrun, mi kagoy hagodol hazeh. Who is like a wise and am chochom v'nova in kagoy hagodol hazeh? Klal Yisrael, they have an expertise in the calculation of Zeman. Now, look at that. If there's no one that's greater than us in calculating the most complex calculations of Zeman and how time works, all the way down to the theory of relativity, then how could it be we were lowered to such a level where we don't even know the calendar date? You don't even know the date of the month? You're the biggest geniuses. You can calculate time like no one else. and you don't even know if today is the ninth day of Tammuz or the 17th day of Tammuz. Do we appreciate what a bizoyan that is? How we go, we've gone mamash mi'igra rama from the highest level to the lowest of the low to make to make such mistakes, to lose our sense of calculating zman. The Nevi'im emphasized we did not even know when the Churban took place.
I can understand being a couple of days off, but 8 days, the moon would clearly tell you that you're 4 or 5 weeks.
It's so you're right that it goes to show we don't appreciate when they're starving. I mean, unfortunately, we know this to be true. The Holocaust in the concentration camps, when you don't eat for weeks, for months. Years, dude. Some of them were 6 years. The whole. They were in camps for 6 years. But the Holocaust went on for 6 years. The torture for 6 years. You don't think. You don't even know if there is a moon. There is not a moon. Okay. Well, that's what they write about. It's something that's impossible for us to relate to. The Nazis. They had food to feed the Jews. They had plenty of food. They could have fed everyone very, very well if they wanted. They deliberately withheld food from the Jews. Why? When you don't have what to eat, you don't think about rebelling. You don't think about trying to overthrow your enemy. The only thing you think about the whole day is food. That's the way the mind works. And Rahman al-Islam, we should never know from such things. But when a person is in a state of starvation, the mind shuts down. Even the most basic, elementary things of keeping track of time are shut down. They were living in Yerushalayim under siege for 3 years. There was no food. And they, because of Sinas Chinam, they killed each other within. They burned all the storage houses of food. They destroyed all their energy supply. They did foolish things. And they had nothing. And they lost sense of reality because of their terrible massif. Let's go further. So over there, ku batsa. Okay, it's in place of a shurok. There's a chirik ki. He's over here. This is kedarkoi. The radak over here is going into some rules of grammar. Doesn't agree with that. Let's look at him in a moment. Even okay, let's see. Let's do one thing at a time. Like, very good. Okay. Normally don't do Ibn Ezra, but now we'll do it because you mentioned, we'll look at it. Let us first read what he says, then we'll look at Ibn Ezra. Okay, he's going into some grammar. Everyone's favorite topic here. What's the real word? The word that we are much more familiar with is the word kubitsa. Kumo upitichu sharayich tamid shehu kumo u. He's giving you an example. To open up. Open up. So there, what is the correct form of the word? Upusichu. With a shurak. But in the pasuk, it's written with a chirik. So here also, we have a word, a funny word, we're not familiar with. It says, ki batsa. If the pasuk would have said, ku bitsa, then you wouldn't have any questions, right? Everyone knows, ku bitsa means to gather. But it doesn't say that. So the Radak comes to the rescue. Well, you don't know the rules. What? Gather. Passive. Gather. But the shurish is to gather. So, but it doesn't say that. Okay, that's because you don't know grammar. When you know grammar, you'll know that there's really no difference between the word ki batsa and kubitsu. Just like there's no difference between the word upi tichu verse uputichu. V'chetim yonason are ma'agar. Zonisa iskinoshu. What does it mean? Iskinoshu. Iskinoshu. Everyone knows means to gather. Kines. So therefore, the Targum Yoinasan ben Uziel is clearly translating the word as it's if it was kibetz or kovatz, to collect, to gather. The Hanochoin, however, look what he says over here. He comes to disagree. You know what's correct? Ki perush ki batsa shaimrain ki batsa shaimrain ki hayu mivim le shaimrain le bate apsilim vat sabim mishar ore yisrael kesev zav menachas bevayim le avodas hapsilim V'nei kol ha-momen ha-zeh mi-estan zoyne ki-batsa oysam shaymrayin oysam shaymrayim shaym k'moy esnan zoyne k'mo she-pirashnu. So let's clarify what he means to say. I think what he's trying to say is the word kuf beis sadik, is it going on the people or is it going on the money? In other words, what is the subject? There is a silent subject. The word appears to mean either way, it refers to gathering, coming together. But it appears what he's trying to say is there's a difference. What is the silent subject of the word? The second translation is what we've been, is the way we've been translating it until now, is that the subject of the word kibatsa refers to the money. The money. Like that's how we translate it. And then we spend the whole yesterday on this. Kimi esnan zayna kibatsa shoimroin, the wealth of the city of shoimroin, the money came, it was collected, the assets were derived from esnan zayna, dirty money. So the word, the subject of kibatsa is the esnan zayna. The esnan zayna, the wealth of shoimroin is sourced in esnan zayna. Now going back to the old, other interpretation, what?
If we're talking about the Etnan, so it has to be...
But what's the alternative interpretation? Let's first clarify. The people. Look at the first interpretation. We have to go back and explain the first interpretation. The first interpretation is Arei Me'agar Zonisa, from the prophet of Znus. Now the Targum is saying, let's go slow. The Targum says it means Arei, because Me'agar Zonisa Iskinoshu. Agar means prophet. Zonisa means Znus. In this case, it means Avodah Zarah. Iskinoshu, they are gathered. So I think what he's saying is the people.
So it had to be Kubtsu, and not Kubatsa.
That's right.
Not in plural, and not in
they, the people, the people.
We're talking about Etnan. The Etnan Kubats. You cannot say Kubatsa. The Etnan is a Zahar, not the Kibat. However, what Ibn Ezra tried to say is Shomron Kibitsa. So then it's fine. It works. But
let's clarify. So what is the Targum? So I didn't clarify the Targum correctly.
What
the Targum appears, sir. Michal, when you want
to
say Michal?
Yeah.
It cannot
show
to the
Rabbim. I'd like to consult our resident expert
here. Why doesn't it say Nikbatsa? Wouldn't that have been neater?
This is in the passive, right?
Yeah, but Kubatsa is like Nikbatsa. It's the same thing. It's like Nifal.
Yeah.
It's was taken
somebody
from.
So
if you have a Yachidin Rabbim here, so that doesn't work.
Okay, I think let me clarify. Let's stay back. I think what he's trying to say is as follows. Everybody say. When it says here kibatsa, what he appears to be saying is the Jews. The subject of the word kibbutzah, according to the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, is that the people, the Jewish people living in Shoimroin, they have been imprisoned. They have been taken as captives. They've been collected by our enemies. Our enemies have rounded us up and put us in a ghetto and are now about to put us on a plane to send us off to Bavel, to be given over as to be given over to the goyim, to be goyim. So we'll just.
His point is, why is this in the singular?
Exactly. So along comes the Radak to the rescue, and the Radak says it's not a problem because according to the rules of grammar, it doesn't say over here with a vav, a shurak, a kubitsu, but it says kibatsa, and kibatsa is the same as if it would have been written maybe even in plural. Let's not get into the plural and the singular. You can say the collective noun. That's not necessarily a problem. It's as if it would have said kubitsu. The main point, we don't have to go into the nitty gritty of the grammar. I'm not knowledgeable in this at all. But what it appears to be saying is there are two very different interpretations of this pasuk. The first interpretation of the pasuk, the way that he's trying to say what the Targum means to say is, the subject are the people. The Jewish people living in Shomrayim are now being collected and being put into a ghetto. They're being rounded up. Why are they being rounded up? Because they're sinners. Ki me esnan zayna, because of the sin of worshipping gods, you're going to be punished. And what is the punished? You're going to be rounded up and put into a ghetto. Ki botza, al tikri ki botza, elo kuvitsu, something like that. You're being rounded up. And what's going to happen to you? They're going to ship you out. They're going to ship you out to exile, to idolaters. V'yad esnan zoyno yoshuvu. They're going to pick you up. They're going to transport you to Ashur. They're going to transport you to Bavel. They're going to take you away, and you're going to live with idolaters. That's seemingly what the Targum says. Along comes the Radak, and he says, I don't like this pshat. It's not grammatically correct. What's this word, ki botza? Doesn't really fit, without going into the details. So he comes to the rescue, and he invents new rules. He goes in the Elam, makes new rules, that the word ki botza really is, if it would have said ku bitsu, you would have been happy. So you know what? Guess what? When there's a chirik instead of a shurak, it's the same, so you should be very happy. But if you want to ask me, I'm going to tell you that you guys got it all wrong. You don't know how to read a pasuk. And the subject of the word ki botza is not the Jewish people. It's not they who are being rounded, being put into a ghetto, and then they're going to be shipped out to goyim. It's referring to the subject of the pasuk, the money, the wealth. That's how we learned until now. The wealth of the Jewish people, which is the wealth. It's been collected in Shomrayim. Shomrayim has a big, fat bank account. There's no deficit in Shomrayim. It's not the United States. Okay? They got plenty of money, surplus, plenty of money in the bank. Plenty of money in the bank. Kibbutzah, the subject of Kibbutzah is their wealth, the Esnan. And because the money has been acquired illegally, or it's dirty money, that money is going to be shipped off to Goyim, to Oiv de Avodah Zarah. So it appears this is the difference of opinion based upon grammar. If you don't know grammar, you don't know how to read. You don't know how to read, do nothing. You can't go to first base without knowing. It opens up a whole new world. I know. I go in the afternoon sometimes. The koyel there, and Rav Simcha Soloveitchik, he runs his koyel. He always says over the same thing, or many over and over. What does it mean, pshat? Let's give you an example. If you don't know, not just grammar, you don't know the shoroshim, you really have no way of understanding anything. It's a shame that we're not trained as much as we should in ripping open words. What is pshat? Rashi always says, lebasi ela lefarish. I want to give you the pshat, the simple meaning. Where does it come from, the word pshat? So he says, I'm sure it must be a chazal. There's only one mikar for the word pshat, by a carbon oila. V'hifshit es ha'oila. To flay the animal. To strip off the skin. You have an animal, and you have to remove the emurim. You have to dismember it, all the various parts, to give all the different kohanim a piece to bring on the mizbeach. First thing you gotta do is take off the skin. You gotta pull off the skin so you can see what's doing under the hood. V'hifshit es ha'olah. U'poshat, right, exactly. Same thing, and it's okay. In Echanami, you're right, it's the same thing. V'hifshit means to strip away the chitzoniyos. Let's see what's going on under the hood. That is pshat. That's probably the opposite of everything that we've been taught. Because when we hear pshat, it always means superficially. Don't confuse me with the facts. Don't tell me something too deep. I might implode. I might self-destruct if you tell me something that's too deep for me. Just tell me misafa vilachutz. Tell me the pshat. Well, the Gemara uses the term. We're probably influenced by the Gemara. Where the Gemara uses the term is not necessarily the way the real meaning of the word. It's colloquial.
It's of course, it's pshita. There's no
right.
No,
it's all the same. But what is the real meaning? Pshit, posh, pshat. Pshat doesn't mean it's the total opposite of what we think. We always think pshat means a simple, superficial translation of the words. Maybe. I hear what you're saying, maybe. Yishrash Yisharesh. But the real essence of the word comes from this pasuk. To understand the inside workings of what is going on, not superficially, but bifnim, the panimius hadvarim, the depth of what something means. The total opposite of what we think pshat means. Okay, so this over here, we have a whole switch of prayers. Let's finish up over here. I just want to finish up. Let's one more line and we're done. V'yarestan zayna yeshuvu ki oiv diava dezore yikhu akol. Okay, like we learned, they'll take everything. Either it means they're going to take the Jews, like according to the parish of the Targum, or like the Radak, they can take the money. Everyone has to come on and say that the second part of the pasuk means they're going to take the wealth, or if you go to the other pshat, they're going to take the people. We're not going to go too deep into that. We'll leave it with that. All right, tomorrow, the Malbim really connects this and the next pasuk. So tomorrow, we're going to go into pasuk.